All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
President Donald Trump has been impeached in a House vote that fell almost entirely along party lines. I'm Tanzina Vega, and today on The Takeaway for December 19th, we'll break down this deeply polarizing moment in U.S. history. Also on the show, a look at the push to make sober living less of a social taboo.
People don't bat an eye if you tell them that gluten kind of gives you a bellyache, so you're not going to eat it anymore. But, you know, if you say that you're not going to drink alcohol, then people are like, oh, you must have a problem.
Lots to get to, so let's bang the gavel.
On this vote, the yeas are 230, the nays are 197, present is one. Article 1 is adopted.
The President of the United States has been impeached for now only the third time in history.
I'm the first person that ever get impeached, and there's no crime. I feel guilty. You know what they call it? Impeachment light. It's impeachment light.
From the very moment that the majority party in this House won, the inevitability that we would be here today was only a matter of what date they would schedule it. Nothing else.
We voted against it three times as recently as July. We did not want this.
House Democrats are dividing the country and further shaking the people's trust in this Congress.
This impeachment is permanent. It will follow him around for the rest of his life, and history books will record it.
Looking away from these crimes against our country is not an option.
Pontius Pilate afforded more rights to Jesus than the Democrats have afforded this president in this process.
We have a president who seems to believe he is a king.
This is a political vendetta. It has nothing to do with the crime committed.
Irregardless of any facts.
He broke our laws. He threatened our security. He abused the highest, most sacred office in our land.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The House has acted on a very sad day to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States. To do so in a manner that was fair, even though the other side was mischaracterizing it. Nonetheless, it was fair.
I'm not worried, because it's always good when you don't do anything wrong, you get impeached. That may be a record that will last forever.
On this vote, the yeas are 229, the nays are 198. Article 2 is adopted.
I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. And we start with the third impeachment of a United States president in history. I'm here with my colleague, Amy Walter, who hosts this show on Fridays. Amy, lots to get to. Thanks for joining us today.
Of course. Hi.
So, you know, one of the things we talk about here on The Takeaway is the truth gap in the United States. And I felt like that, frankly, was on full display yesterday during the hours-long vote. I was really struck by the gap between what Republicans and Democrats were saying, and we just heard a little bit of that at the top. So let's talk a little bit about strategy. Democrats want to take the high road, saying they're doing this for the Constitution, to save democracy. Republicans seem to be in lockstep with talking points that have taken hold in the party, deep state, media conspiracy, et cetera. We've debunked many of those on the show. Amy, what stood out to you?
We are at a point now in our political process where we do have these media bubbles that all of us live in, and nothing really penetrates that. Even when you may have a question about something that relates to your party, right? Maybe you don't totally agree with or you have questions about, but nuance is not allowed in this bubble. It is either yes or no, black or white. And so there was never and has not been an opportunity for some Democrats who say, look, maybe this is bad. I don't know if we're to the place where there's impeachment. That voice wasn't allowed. And for Republicans to be able to say, I think what he did was wrong and we do have to stand up for the rule of law like we've done before, that wasn't allowed. Again, I think it is breaking down that way along voters in this country, in large part because they're using the cues from media, but also their political leaders to decide their positions on this issue.
To that point, I want to remind listeners, I mean, I remember the last president to be impeached was Bill Clinton. I would argue that it was around that time that the GOP really began splitting ideologically from the party of Reagan to even the party of Lincoln to this sort of more rabid style of partisanship that we see today that really has no boundaries other than loyalty to the president. Amy, are the Republicans at this point just feeding the beast?
I think what we are in right now is a sense that, and yes, it's Republicans, but I think we're going to get to a place where Democrats are also at this point. They are right now in some ways. This idea that it's all or none strategy. There's no like long-term thinking. Okay, part of the reason that the political process works, and quite frankly, so many of our institutions work, is that the losers believe that someday they're going to be on the losing end. Someday I'm not going to be in the majority. Someday I'm not going to be the biggest fish in the pond. And I'm going to want to be treated fairly. So I'm going to treat those who aren't in my position of power fairly. That's how we know this should work. That doesn't work anymore, right? That's now it's very short term. Can you win today? Forget about 10 years from now, 2 years from now. What do you need to get what you want done today?
And I wonder if that helps explain a little bit of going back to strategy for a second, because the strategy I think that we've seen so far from a lot of the Republicans leading up to now, particularly in a lot of the hearings that we've seen, have been whether it's Brett Kavanaugh, the Mueller report, the impeachment hearings, is a lot of outrage. It's a lot of yelling. It's a lot of indignation. Does that help explain it? I've got to win today. I've got to sell this today at all costs.
Well, and it's also the animating strategy and the animating rationale behind the Trump candidacy and the Trump presidency. It is about grievance and outrage and a sense that we have been wronged for all of these years, either when Obama was president, Democrats were in charge, and also just more broadly, American culture, the American economy, American demography has been all pushing one way and pushing us out. And we've been on the sidelines and we're not going to take it anymore. And every opportunity there is to show how we've been sidelined and maligned and ignored, we are going to highlight. And so, look, the cycle of outrage, I think, to me, is one of the most detrimental developments in our politics. And quite frankly, it is encouraged by our media platforms, right? How do you sell advertising? Well, you got to keep people tuned to their cable news boxes, and you're not going to do it by having really thoughtful conversations. You have to keep people engaged and outraged. And the same with the social media platforms. And so it just is a self-perpetuating process.
And to that end, I mean, let's be honest, there are more 20 House Republicans announced they won't be running for re-election in 2020. So this isn't all. I mean, I guess the big question for me is, you know, a lot of these folks will end up probably leaving government and probably going
That's
off
right.
into the private sector to make more money. So why would they, with nothing at least political to lose, if you will, why would they stick to party lines?
Right. So this is always a question, right? How much of this is just pure political calculation? How much of this is loyalty? And how much of this is their like actual belief in the system? And I think sometimes it's hard to disengage all of that or to untangle all of that, especially when you've been part of the process for so long. Those things become almost all one in the same, right? You identify with all of those pieces you just mentioned, Tanzina. It's not just, this is my party, this is my tribe, these are my values, but it's now makes up the entity of you is number one. From the purely cynical piece, which is number two, that yes, everyone has a short-term memory and we will move on to the next outrage very soon, but if you want to have any sort of political future in the immediate term, and you're right, whether that is you're going to go lobby, you're going to go back home and run for a different office, or you just want to be involved in Republican politics, being seen as a quote unquote traitor is going to damage you for the foreseeable future.
And yet there were a handful of Democrats who did vote against impeachment. One of them was New Jersey Representative Jeff Van Drew, who's indicated that he's switching over to the Republican Party. So maybe not much of a surprise there. But I mean, were these folks that were just outliers who wanted to vote that way for their own political gain? Because, I mean, are people really going to remember these folks on the national stage, to given your the point that you made about having a short-term memory?
Like,
is anyone really going to know who those three votes
No.
were?
I mean, nobody really remembers who voted. I was just going through the Clinton impeachment and, you know, there were four articles and, you know, who voted against this one and who voted for that one and how many defections were here and there. And there were a handful on each of those articles, but I don't remember who those people were, and they're not going down in history as, well, you know, I voted against Article 3. Right. That's how America will remember me. No, absolutely not. And even the people that we were the most, like, when you think about the Senate trial, somebody like Joe Lieberman, who had been very publicly lamenting the choice in front of him and doing a lot of hand-wringing about how much he disapproved of what President Clinton had done, even then, in the end, he stuck by his party. And of course, the next year he was picked as a running mate. And then 4 years after that, what is he known for now more than anything else? Being John McCain's best friend.
Right. Joe. And, right.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And interestingly enough, his son is running for the Senate in Georgia, and he's trying as hard as he can to distance himself from his father's more moderate legacy.
When we talk a lot about swing voters and independent voters, are they going to be influenced by what they saw yesterday? I mean, part of me wants to say yes, but then again, I don't know if I see lots of swaying happening at all based on this impeachment.
Yeah. You know, it's a really good point. And I think for folks who don't follow politics obsessively, which quite frankly is most normal people, what they saw or listened to was just, it seemed like a lot of yelling and not a lot of conversation. And so I don't know that that process alone made people feel like, I should really tune in. I should really come to understand what's going on here. My reaction personally when I hear people fighting is just to step away. And I think that is probably what happened. To most voters that who sort of see themselves in the middle, or at least see themselves not really aligned with a party or a position in this fight.
And there are, of course, dueling positions here at the very top. We know that Nancy Pelosi, after the articles of impeachment were passed, said that she's going to wait to send them to the Senate until Mitch McConnell guarantees a fair trial. Mitch McConnell has been very outspoken about the fact that he is going to go with the president and the White House. What leverage does Pelosi have, Amy?
I'm really perplexed by this. I don't think a whole lot. And I do think for Democrats, the process itself, dragging this out, is going to be more of a problem than it is going to be helpful to them. I think that if you look at, again, all of the data that's come in from all of the polling and the focus grouping, voters have pretty much made up their mind on this. They get the joke. They know that the Senate is not going to convict the president. Dragging this out looks very political. It looks exactly like what voters, at least in 2018, told Congress they didn't want to see. They were tired of the show. They were tired of the reality politics. They wanted to move on and get to the issues. And I think dragging this out and making it look as ugly as it looked yesterday is not going to benefit Democrats at all. So I wouldn't be surprised to see that by the time we hit early January, articles go up, we have a Senate trial, the president is not convicted or is acquitted, we move on, and by the summer, we kind of almost forget that impeachment even happened.
Amy Walter is the host of Politics with Amy Walter here on The Takeaway every Friday and national editor of the Cook Political Report. Amy, thanks so much.
Thanks, Tanzi.
The archives at Carnegie Hall hold treasures from our cultural history. In the new podcast, If This Hall Could Talk, we use these items as touchstones to explore how the past shaped the world we live in today. I'm your host, Jessica Vosk, and I'll be joined by historians, performers, cultural critics, and others to look back at the iconic venue's legendary and sometimes quirky history. If This Hall Could Talk, from Carnegie Hall and distributed by WQXR. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
For some people, the holidays go hand in hand with holiday drinks. But today, we're going to take you to a different kind of bar.
Okay, so this is the Small Bluff. It has kind of a 1 3/4 ounces of the Seedlip spice in it, 3/4 ounce of our fennel shrub, which is a drinking vinegar that we make here with apple cider vinegar and fresh fennel, 3/4 ounce of freshly squeezed lemon juice, and it has 2 dashes of non-alcoholic celery bitters and a sprig of fennel on top.
That's Lola Heschen, a bartender at Getaway Bar in Brooklyn. And one thing that drink does not have is alcohol.
And then shake it with ice for like 15 to 20 seconds, however long your heart desires. And then you strain that into a Nicanora, kind of a tulip-shaped glass.
Non-alcoholic craft cocktails are becoming more and more popular at bars around the country. But Getaway Bar is the only completely non-alcoholic bar in New York City. Whether battling addiction or wanting to get healthier or both, more Americans are talking about abstaining from alcohol. And I wanted to learn more, so I spoke with Regina DeLay, one of the owners of Getaway Bar. And I asked her why she decided to keep the bar completely alcohol-free.
We really did want to have a space where if you didn't want to be around it at all, like you didn't want to be tempted by it, you didn't want to have to deal with people who had been consuming it, you didn't want to have to deal with any of that stuff, you could come and you could feel safe and comfortable and know that there wasn't going to be any odd situations there.
Who goes to the bar?
There's definitely a lot of people who are sober who don't drink alcohol at all. We also get a lot, especially, you know, during the week, it's people who have an interview in the morning or have something important and who want to have a night out with their friends but don't necessarily want to be tempted by let's split a bottle or whatever it is. And then we also get a lot of expecting mothers. We get a lot of people who are training for marathons and stuff like that. So it's really a pretty broad audience.
What are they looking for? Are they all looking to just sort of not be tempted, or are people sort of going there because their friend isn't drinking, so they want to drink or not drink with them in solidarity, for example?
There is a lot of that. There will oftentimes be a couple of people who don't drink and they'll say, oh, I'm so excited to be able to go out with everybody, or I'm so excited to be able to participate, because, you know, getting a seltzer when everybody else is getting a drink with alcohol isn't the same, as any expecting mother will tell you. And so there's a lot of that. But I think what people are really looking for is the same thing they're looking for when they go to a bar. You know, they're looking for a social experience. They're looking to connect with friends or make new friends or whatever it is, and they just don't feel like they need alcohol in order to do that. And there are definitely people who are just like, I realized I was drinking every single night and that was probably not a good thing for me, and so now I don't drink on weeknights or something like that. And then we also have people who are just starting to be sober, and they're really happy to be able to go out and have this kind of, like, they're still doing the things that they did when they were not sober, but they're not tempted by the alcohol.
We talked about the customers. What about the staff? I mean, was it hard to find bartenders, if you will, who could make really good non-alcoholic drinks? Do you guys source from your bartenders? Did you already have a menu set up where you were asking people, you know, to come up with stuff?
Right. Well, so when we first opened, we worked with a consultant who had worked at bars that had non-alcoholic menus. Her name is Jen Yoon, and she kind of consulted with us, and she really taught us almost everything that we know. I mean, most of the recipe books and stuff out there are for drinks with alcohol. And our whole MO from the beginning has been that we don't want to have something that is lacking. So a lot of mocktails are just a cocktail without the alcohol. And that's not right. We wanted to approach it from the ground up. And so Jen really kind of taught us how to do that. And then since then, so that was our kind of launch menu. And then since then, our bartenders are constantly experimenting. We have a lot of like interesting ingredients and things that you wouldn't necessarily find in another bar. And so they have a lot of fun experimenting. And so we have a lot of stuff that's constantly getting added to our menu now.
Do you think there's a chance that people who really struggle with alcohol, I mean, being in an environment where there isn't any alcohol at all is helpful, but being in an environment that's still called a bar with bartenders and drinks, is that, to use the word, triggering for some folks potentially?
I think it could be. I mean, I think I'm not sober myself, so I don't want to speak for sober people, but I do. That is something that came up, you know, when we were doing research and when we were talking to people. There are definitely people who don't want to be in that environment, and we fully understand that. For the most part, what we've tried to do is there are certain things on the menu that are, so we have, for example, 0.0% beers. And I think that's one thing that some people really love, and we initially didn't have them on the menu for those reasons, but people loved it and were asking us for it all the time, and so we added it. But then there are certain people who are totally not comfortable having that because it's too triggering or it's too close.
It'll make them want to have an actual beer with alcohol in it, and that might,
So for the most part, you know, especially if someone has kind of told us their story, and a lot of people do, they'll kind of explain where they're coming from, then like we'll kind of make a point of saying like, this does taste a lot like a beer, just so that you know, and then that way they're kind of aware going into it. And then otherwise, you know, we try to communicate with people, and we try to, like, most people don't necessarily have a starting point, because this is a totally new concept. And so they come in and they kind of tell us a little bit and they ask us questions. And so we're able to feel it out that way. But it is something that we think about.
It's interesting because you often see, at least in movies and on television, when someone's confiding in the bartender, it's because they've had a lot of alcohol, right? And this is almost the opposite, someone going in and saying, I'm not drinking and let me tell you why, which is a really vulnerable position to be in for a lot of folks. So part of the reason why we're talking about this now is because it's the holiday season. Mm-hmm. There are folks who are either sober curious or just abstain from alcohol for other reasons. There's a lot of pressure at this time of year to drink alcohol. If you're throwing a party at home, are there options that people should be thinking about if they want to serve non-alcoholic options besides, as you said, seltzer? Right.
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends. I mean, I'm always a big fan of having like one mocktail option. I think it depends a little bit on your taste, but I think that can be as easy as like a spiced hot chocolate or something like that that feels really seasonable and tasty and just kind of shows that you're thinking about people, because I think it's in a holiday party environment, people just want to feel included. And so having an option like a spiced hot chocolate or something like that is pretty accessible, but it also makes people feel welcome and like you're thinking about them and like they don't have to sit out in the corner separated from the rest of the party.
And what about just dealing with some of the pressure to drink? And that happens, I think, a lot with company parties and places where people are going. And do you have any thoughts on how people can sort of avoid alcohol or just drink less during this time of year?
I'm a little bit more focused on, I think that the company kind of has a responsibility to provide alternatives. And I think that if you're having an open bar holiday party, you should talk to the bartenders and you should make sure there are non-alcoholic options and those should be on the menu. And I think that if you take that extra step, then people feel a little less uncomfortable putting that out there because they can just order a drink on the menu like everybody else. Theirs just doesn't happen to have alcohol. And I think that's a lot of the time where it comes up because, like you said, they don't want to feel different. They don't want to feel excluded. And so if they have an option, then they'll take it. It's when they don't have an option that then they kind of lean towards the other stuff.
Regina, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Regina DeLay is the co-owner of Getaway Bar in Brooklyn. Today, more and more people are promoting and celebrating sobriety and moderation from drinking. There are books and podcasts and lifestyle blogs and Instagram accounts that connect abstaining from alcohol with the wider wellness movement. Joy Manning is the editor of Edible Philly and the creator of the Better Without Booze website. And when I spoke with her, I asked her why she had decided to give up drinking.
I actually decided to stop drinking it many times in my life, like a lot of people. In January of 2017, during a dry January, I just finally confronted the fact that I felt so much better without having alcohol in my life at all that I was just not going to go back to drinking. If you talk to experts on alcohol use disorder, they don't tend to use the term alcoholic. It's not that useful. Alcohol use disorder is a spectrum. And if you went to a wedding last year where you got drunk and were hungover, then that's one of the things that you look for. If you've ever tried to cut back on the amount that you're drinking and have struggled to do it, that's another sign. So yes, it was a lifestyle upgrade, but did I fall somewhere on the spectrum of alcohol use disorder? Yeah, probably. But I think many drinkers do.
So there are lots of people who want to abstain from drinking entirely, who are making the choice to do that. There are people who are struggling with addiction to alcohol. When you stopped drinking, did you feel a stigma for abstaining?
Absolutely. I struggled with my husband, who couldn't wrap his mind around it. My mom, his mom, my friends. I told one of my friends that I wasn't going to drink alcohol anymore. And she said to me, but you'll drink at my wedding, right? And I said, no, I don't think I'm going to drink at your wedding. And the fact is, I enjoy weddings much more now that I don't drink alcohol. People don't bat an eye if you tell them that gluten kind of gives you a bellyache, so you're not going to eat it anymore. But, you know, if you say that you're not going to drink alcohol, then people are like, oh, you must have a problem. But the people in your life get used to it. You have to train them, and then they accept it.
I've noticed that I've definitely curtailed and stopped many, many times. And I've noticed that the less I drink, the more uncomfortable people feel. Sometimes. Have you found that as well?
To a point. I will say that I thought a lot about my drinking for many years before I stopped drinking. And at some point, I started to shift to want to be around people who drank less or not at all. So I have found that people that themselves have no issues with alcohol are totally supportive of my decision not to drink. It's people who are uncomfortable with their own relationship with alcohol that have an uncomfortable reaction to my decision. if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Now, how did you go from that personal decision to making this online identity better without booze?
When I decided to give up alcohol, I quickly realized that managing my thinking about drinking was very important. We all have certain habitual thoughts about alcohol, and one of mine was that everybody drinks and that it's normal to drink. And because I work as a food writer and I have lots of friends and colleagues in the restaurant and bar space, my personal Instagram was filled up with cocktails and wine, and it was easy to see how that would give me the idea that everyone was drinking. So I wanted to have a place online where I could change the channel. So I created a second Instagram account for myself where I would only follow people that were not drinking, sober people. So I started with the sober people I knew in real life, and then I started following hashtags like sober or sober curious, and then I would add accounts for people that didn't drink, so that when I was having that thought, oh, everyone is drinking, I could literally go to that feed and see, oh, no, people are doing hot yoga. People are putting puzzles together. People are playing video games. People are cooking. You know, people are doing lots of other things when I think everyone is just drinking. And that was very helpful for me as a way to, like, disprove that unhelpful thought. So I picked the handle Better Without Booze because I just found that every single aspect of my life was better without booze, and I couldn't believe it. The writer in me was like, oh, that's a great title for a website. So I went and I grabbed the URL.
What have you found? Are people trying to get in touch with you on your website and Instagram? And if so, what are they looking for? Are they looking for help? Are they looking for to get rid of the stigma? Are they looking for support?
I actually am surprised at how many times I get messages from people. Sometimes they're just messages of thanks to say, thank you for being open about this. Thank you for showing me that it's possible to quit drinking when you are not a quote-unquote alcoholic, and that you will have dinners out and fun at parties. Like, that's really helped me, which is a message I love to get. I also hear from people locally. I live in Philadelphia, and people frequently ask me if I'll meet them for coffee just to talk about my experience and listen to their experience. And that's super satisfying for me, too. I always try to make time to do that. I was actually just at a restaurant over the weekend where I ran into someone I had one of those coffee talks with, and she whispered in my ear on my way out, you know, that she hadn't had a drink in 5 months. And it just really made me happy because I know what a great life improvement it is.
Is this replacing the traditional Alcoholics Anonymous model, you think? Like, are people put off by not just the word alcoholic, but just the way that we tend to think about sobriety and getting sober in this country?
Well, there's no doubt that the word alcoholic has great stigma and unhelpful stigma. But I would never say that it's replacing Alcoholics Anonymous and that 12-step model, which is so helpful and even life-saving to people. What I do think it's doing is creating another path. You know, we're all different, and everyone, just like any other lifestyle intervention, we all respond differently to different ideas, different protocols, you know, and so I think it is great to have another option when it comes to getting sober. And I think the most important part of it is, like, you can get off the alcohol train, like, several stops early. Like, that train used to take you straight to alcoholism, but now you can stop at any time. You can get off that path at any time.
There are folks who may not want to stop drinking entirely, who may want to moderate their drinking. As you said, there's a spectrum of alcohol abuse in this country, well, across the globe, really. And for those who may want to moderate their drinking, for whom that's possible, I should say, how do they do that?
Well, how do they do that? I struggle to
do that.
I'm sure, yeah, some people can. My husband and I used to drink at least one glass of wine on most days. Since I stopped drinking, he hasn't quit entirely, but he drinks maybe one or two glasses of wine a month when we're at a restaurant or some other occasion where he just feels like having one. And so obviously it is possible.
So it's the holiday season, and it's the time of year for holiday parties, whether that's office parties or home house parties that people are having, and of course, Christmas and New Year's. Lots of alcohol moments happening right now. And oftentimes that's free. You know, your office party has an open bar. You go to people's homes and they're filling your glass as soon as you walk in the door. People are being gifted lots of alcohol. How do people navigate the holidays, especially when they don't want to drink?
Well, I think one thing that you can keep in mind is you can always say, I'm not drinking alcohol today. You know, everybody understands there's a lot of parties or, you know, I'm the designated driver tonight. That's something that you can say. Another very effective thing is I'll start with water. A lot of times if you tell a host, I'll start with water, then it never comes up again. Just politely decline is really all that is required if you don't want to drink.
What about gifting or receiving alcohol?
I personally think it is not a good idea to gift alcohol because you never know what's going on in someone's relationship with alcohol. If you're presenting a bottle of wine to someone you don't know very well as like the default gift, the default hostess gift, I think that just contributes to the normalization of alcohol in our culture, which isn't helping anyone. And even if you have someone that has all the trappings of being like a wine aficionado or a whiskey lover, you just don't know how they feel, what's going on in their mind. A lot of people keep their struggles around alcohol very private. And so I just don't think it makes a good gift. And I would suggest trying to think of something else.
Joy Manning is the editor of Edible Philly and the creator of the website Better Without Booze. Joy, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we want to give a shout out to our production team, Ethan Oberman, Rob Gunther, Jose Olivares, Meg Dalton, Jason Tureski, Jivika Varma, and Andres O'Hara. Our senior producers are Amber Hall and Alexandra Boti. Polly Irungu and Dina Said Ahmed are our digital editors. Claire McKean and Debbie Daughtry are our board operators. Jay Cowett is our director and sound designer. David Gable is our executive assistant. And a big thank you to our intern, Lita Hallowell. This was her last week with us, and she put in a lot of great work. And on Friday, you can also find a special podcast of this entire series in your podcast feed. Make sure you're subscribed to The Takeaway. You can also find all of the interviews from the series online at thetakeaway.org/comedy. Thanks for listening, everyone. I'm Tanzina Vega. This is The Takeaway, and we'll see you tomorrow.